You keep her safe and away from me, Mama said to Matthew, who nodded. Lenny stared at her mother. The whole of their lives and all of their love was in that look.
You won't go back to him, Lenny said. You'll call the police, press charges. We'll meet up in 24 hours, then we'll run away. You promise?
Mama nodded, hugged her fiercely, kissed her tears away. Go, she said in a sharp voice. After Mama got out of the truck and they drove away, Lenny sat there, replaying it all in her mind, crying quietly. Every breath hurt, and she had to fight the urge to go back, to be with her mother. Had she done the wrong thing by leaving her? Matthew turned at the Walker gate, rumbled beneath the welcoming arch.
We can't go here. He'll look for us here, Lenny said. Mama said we needed to disappear for a day.
He parked, got out. I know, but it's low tide. We can't use the boats or the float plane. I only know one place to disappear. Stay here. 5 minutes later, Matthew was back with a backpack, which he tossed into the bed of the truck. Lenny kept looking behind them, down the Walker driveway.
Don't worry, he won't find the distributor cap for a while, Matthew said.
And they were off again, turning onto the main road, then left, toward the mountain. Turns, switchbacks, river crossings, up and up they went. Finally, they pulled into a dirt parking lot and stopped abruptly. There were no other vehicles. A sign at the trailhead read, Bear Claw Wilderness Area. Allowable uses, hiking, camping, rock climbing. Distance, 2.8 miles one way. Difficulty, challenging, steep climbs. Elevation gain, 2,600 feet. Camping, Sawtooth Ridge, near marked Eagle Creek Crossing. Matthew helped Lenny out of the truck. Kneeling, he checked her waffle stompers, retied her laces.
You okay?
What if he...
She got away. Large Marge will protect her, and she wanted you safe.
I know. Let's go,
she said dully.
We've got a long hike ahead of us. Can you make it?
Lenny nodded. They headed for the trail, with Matthew leading and Lenny following along behind him, struggling to keep up. They climbed for hours, saw no one. The trail snaked along a sheer granite cliff. Below them was the sea, waves crashing into rocks. The ground trembled at each wave's impact, or maybe Lenny just thought it did because life felt so unstable now. Even the ground felt unreliable. Finally, Matthew came to what he'd been looking for, a huge, grassy field thick with purple lupin. Snow whitened the peaks. Below lay folds of granite, dotted here and there by the white dots that were doll sheep. He dropped his pack into the grass and turned to face Lenny. He handed her a smoked salmon sandwich and a can of warm Coke, and while she ate, he set up a pup tent deep in the grass. Later, with a fire crackling in front of the tent and the orange flaps pinned open, Matthew sat on the grass beside her. He put an arm around her. She leaned into him.
You don't have to be the only one protecting her, you know, he said. We'll all take care of you. It's always been that way in Connac.
Lenny wanted that to be true. She wanted to believe there was a safe place for her and Mama, a do-over of their lives, a beginning that didn't rise from the ashes of a violent, terrible ending. Mostly, she didn't want to feel solely responsible for her Mama's safety anymore. She turned to Matthew, loving him so much, so desperately, it felt like she was being held underwater and needed oxygen.
I love you.
Me too, he said.
Up here, in the vastness of Alaska, the words sounded infinitesimal and small. A fist, shaken at the gods. 21. His job was to keep her safe. Lenny was his North Star. He knew it sounded stupid and girly and romantic, and that people would say he was too young to know these things, only he wasn't. When your mom died, you grew up. He hadn't been able to protect his mom, to save her. He was stronger now. He held Lenny in his arms all night last night, loved her,
felt her twitch at bad dreams, listened to her sobs. He knew how that was, nightmares like that about your mom. Finally, when the first glimmer of daylight pulsed through the pup tent's tangerine, nylon sides, he eased away from her, smiling at the muffled sound of her snoring. He dressed in yesterday's clothes, put on his hiking boots, and stepped outside. Gray clouds muscled across the sky, lowered over the trail. The breeze was more a sigh than anything else, but it was the end of August. The leaves were changing color at night. They both knew what that meant. Change came even faster up here. Matthew busied himself building a fire on the black remnants of last night's blaze. Sitting on a rock, leaning forward, he stared into the wavering flames. The breeze kicked up, taunted the flames. Now, sitting by the fire alone, he admitted to himself that he was afraid he'd done the wrong thing by bringing Lenny here, afraid he'd done the wrong thing by leaving Cora in Connick, afraid he'd turn around and see Ernt barreling up the trail with a rifle in one hand and a bottle of whiskey in the other. Mostly, he was afraid for Lenny, because no matter how this all worked out, no matter if she did everything perfectly and got away and saved her mom, Lenny's heart would always have a broken place. It didn't matter how you lost a parent or how great or shitty that parent was, a kid grieved forever. Matthew grieved for the mother he'd had. He figured Lenny would grieve for the dad she wanted. He settled a camp coffee pot in the fire, right in the flames. Behind him, he heard rustling, the zipping sound of nylon being moved. Lenny pushed back the flaps and stepped out into the morning. A raindrop splattered into her eye as she braided her hair. "Hey," he said, offering her coffee. Another raindrop fell on the metal cup. She took the cup in both hands, sat beside him, leaned against him. Another raindrop fell, pinged on the coffee pot, sizzled, and turned to steam.
"Great timing," Lenny said. "It's going to dump on us any second."
"There's a cave up at Glacier Ridge."
She looked up at him. "I can't stay away."
"But your mom said..."
"I'm scared," she said in a small voice. He heard the spike of uncertainty in her voice, recognized that she was asking him something, not simply telling him that she was afraid. He understood. She didn't know what the right answer was, and she was afraid to be wrong.
"You think I should go back for her?" she asked.
"I think you stand by the people you love."
He saw her relief and her love.
"I might not be able to go to college. You know that, right? I mean, if we have to run, we'll have to go somewhere he won't look."
"I'll go with you," he said. "Wherever you go."
She drew in a breath, looked shaky enough that he thought she might collapse.
"You know what I love most about you, Matthew?"
"What?"
She knelt in the wet grass in front of him, took his face in her cold hands, and kissed him. She tasted of coffee.
"Everything."
After that, there didn't seem to be much to say. Matthew knew Lenny was distracted, that she couldn't think about anything but her mom, and that her eyes kept filling with tears as she brushed her teeth and rolled up her sleeping bag. He also knew how relieved she was to be going back. He would save her. He would. He'd find a way. He'd go to the police, or the press, or his dad. Hell, maybe he'd go to Ernt himself. Bullies were always cowards who could be made to back down. It would work. They'd separate Ernt from Lenny and Cora and let them start a new life. Lenny could go to college with Matthew. Maybe it wouldn't be in Anchorage. Maybe it wouldn't even be in Alaska, but who cared? All he wanted was to be with her. Somewhere in the world, they would find a fresh start. They ate breakfast, packed up camp, and made it about 50 feet back down the trail before the storm hit for real. They were in a place so narrow they had to walk single file.
"Stay close," Matthew shouted above the driving rain and screeching wind.
His jacket made a sound like cards being shuffled. Rain plastered his hair to his face, blinded him. He reached back, took Lenny's hand. It slipped free. Rain ran in rivulets over the granite trail, turned the rock slippery.
To their left, fireweed quivered and lay flattened, broken by wind and rain. The trail darkened. Mist rolled in, obscured everything. Matthew blinked, tried to see. Rain hammered his nylon hood. His face was wet, rain running down his cheeks, burrowing beneath his collar, beating his eyelashes. He heard something. A scream. He spun around. Lenny wasn't behind him. He started back, shouting her name. A tree limb smacked him in the face, hard. Then he saw her. She was about 20 feet away, off the trail, too far to the right. He saw her make a mistake. She slipped, started to fall. She screamed, fought for balance, tried to right herself, reaching for something, anything. There was nothing.
Lenny!
He yelled. She fell. Pain. Lenny woke in a stinking darkness, sprawled in the mud, unable to move without pain. She heard the drip, drip, drip of water, rain falling on rock. The air smelled fetid, of dead things and decay. Something in her chest was broken, a rib, maybe, she was pretty sure. And maybe her left arm. It was either broken or her shoulder was dislocated. She was on her backpack, splayed above it. Maybe it had saved her life. Ironic. She peeled the bug-out bag straps away from her shoulders, ignoring the seizing, scalding pain that came with the smallest movement. It took forever to free herself. When she did it, she lay there, arms and legs sprawled out, panting, sick to her stomach. Move, Lenny. She gritted her teeth and rolled sideways, plopped into a deep and slimy mud. Breathing hard, hurting, trying not to cry, she lifted her head, looked around. Darkness. It smelled bad down here, of rot and mold. The ground was deep mud, and the walls were slick, wet rock. How long had she been unconscious? She crawled slowly forward, holding her broken arm close to her body. She made her slow, agonizing way to a slice of light that illuminated a slab of granite carved by time and water into a saucer shape. It hurt so much she puked, but kept going. She heard her name being yelled. She crawled onto the concave stone slab, looked up. Rain blinded her. Way up above her, she saw the blurry red of Matthew's jacket.
Lenny! I'm here!
She tried to scream the words, but the pain in her chest made it impossible. She waved her good arm, but knew he couldn't see her. The opening in the crevasse above her head was slim, no wider than a bathtub. Through it, rain fell hard, its percussive sound a roar of noise in the dark cave.
Go for help!
She yelled as best she could. Matthew leaned over the sheer edge, trying to reach down for a tree that grew stubbornly from the rock. He was going to come for her.
No!
She shouted. He eased one leg over the rock ledge, inched downward, looking for some place to put his foot. He paused, maybe reassessing. That's right. Stop. It's too dangerous. Lenny wiped her eyes, trying to focus in the downpour. He found a foothold and climbed over the ledge and hung there, suspended on the rock wall. He stayed there a long time, a red and blue X on the gray stone wall. Finally, he reached to his left for the tree, tugged on it, testing it. Holding it, he moved to another foothold a little lower. Lenny heard a clatter of stones and knew what was happening, saw it in a kind of stunned, horrified, slow motion. The tree pulled out of the rock side. Matthew was still holding on to it when he fell. Rock, shale, mud, rain, and Matthew crashed down, his scream lost in the avalanche of falling rock. He tumbled downward, his body cracking branches, thudding into stone, ricocheting. She threw an arm across her face and turned her head as the debris landed on her. Stones hit her. One cut her cheek.
Matthew! Matthew!
She saw the final falling rock, too late to duck. Lenny is out in Tutka Bay with Mama, in the canoe Dad salvaged. Mama is talking about her favorite movie, Splendor in the Grass, the story of young love gone wrong.
Warren loves Natalie, you can tell, but it isn't enough.
Lenny is hardly listening. The words aren't what matter. It is the moment. She and Mama are playing hooky, living another life, ignoring the list of chores that awaits them at the cabin. It is what Mama calls a bluebird day, except the bird Lenny sees in the crystal blue sky is a bald eagle with a 6-foot wingspan gliding overhead. Not far away, on a jagged outcropping of black rock, seals lie together, barking at the eagle. Shorebirds caw but keep away. A small pink dog collar glitters in the uppermost branches of a tree near a huge eagle's nest. A boat chugs past the canoe, upsetting the calm water. Tourists wave, cameras raised.
"You'd think they'd never seen a canoe before," Mama says, then picks up her paddle. "Well, we'd best get home." "I don't want this to end," Lenny whines.
Mama's smile is unfamiliar. Something isn't quite right.
"You need to help him, baby girl. Help yourself."
Suddenly, the canoe tilts sideways so hard everything tumbles into the water. Bottles, thermoses, a day pack. Mama somersaults past Lenny, screaming, and splashes into the water. Disappears. The canoe rights itself. Lenny scrambles to the side, peers over, yells, "Mama!" A black fin, sharp as a knife blade, comes up from the water, rising, rising, until it is almost as tall as Lenny. Killer whale. The fin blots out the sun, darkens the sky all at once. Everything goes black. Lenny hears the gliding of the orca, the splash as it emerges, the snort of air through its blowhole. She smells the decaying fish on its breath. Lenny opened her eyes, breathing hard. A headache pounded in her skull, and the taste of blood filled her mouth. The world was dark and fetid-smelling, putrid. She looked up. Matthew hung in the crevice above her, caught between the two rock walls, suspended, his feet hanging above her head, stuck in place by his backpack.
"Matthew? Matthew?"
He didn't answer. Maybe he couldn't. Maybe he was dead. Something dripped onto her face. She wiped it away, tasted blood. She struggled to sit up. The pain was so violent she vomited all over herself and passed out. When she came to, she almost puked again at the smell of her own vomit splattered across her chest.
Think. Help him.
She was Alaskan. She could survive, damn it. It was the one thing she knew how to do. The one thing her father had taught her.
"It's a crevasse, Matthew, not a bear cave, so that's good."
No brown bear would be ambling in, looking for a place to sleep. She moved inch by inch around the entire interior, her hands feeling the slick rock walls. No exit. She crawled back onto the saucer rock and looked up at Matthew.
"So, the only way out is up."
Blood dripped down his leg, plopped onto the rock beside her. She stood up.
"You're blocking the only way out, so I need to get you unstuck. The pack is the problem."
The added width had him pinned.
"If I can get the pack off you, you'll fall."
Fall. That didn't sound like a great plan, but she couldn't think of anything better. Okay. How? She moved gingerly, wedged her numb hand into the waistband of her pants. She slid/fell off the saucer-shaped rock, splashed into the squishy mud. A sharp pain jabbed her in the chest, made her gasp. She dug through her bug-out bag and found her knife. Biting down on it, she crawled to a place directly below Matthew's feet. Now all she had to do was get to him and cut him free. How? She couldn't reach his feet. Climb. How? She had one good arm, and the stone wall was slick and wet. On rocks. She found some large flat rocks and dragged them to the wall and stacked them as best she could. It took forever. She was pretty sure that twice she passed out and awoke and started again. When she had built a stack that was about 1.5 feet high, she took a deep breath and stepped on top of it. At her weight, one of the rocks slid out from under her. She fell hard, cracked her bad arm on something, and screamed.
She tried 4 more times, falling each time. It wasn't going to work. The rocks were too slippery, and they were unstable when stacked.
Okay.
So she couldn't climb layered rocks. Maybe that should have been obvious. She slogged to the wall, reached out to touch its cold, clammy surface. She used her good hand to trace the wet stone, feeling for every bump and ridge and indentation. A little light bled down on either side of Matthew. She burrowed through her pack, found a headlamp, put it on. With light, she saw differences in the slab, ledges, holes, footholds. She felt upward, sideways, out, found a small lip of stone for her foot, and stepped up onto it. She steadied herself, then felt for another. She fell hard, lay there stunned, breathing hard, staring up at him.
Okay, try again.
With every attempt, she memorized a new bump in the wall of the crevasse. On her 6th try, she made it all the way up, high enough to grab his backpack to steady herself. His left leg was terrible to look at, bones sticking out, torn flesh, his foot almost backward. He hung limply, his head lolling to the side, blood smearing his face into something completely unrecognizable. She couldn't tell if he was breathing.
"I'm here, Matthew. Hang on," she said. "I'm going to cut you loose."
She drew in a deep breath. Using the pocket knife blade, she sawed through the pack straps, shoulder, and waist. It took forever to do with one hand, but finally she was done. Nothing happened. She cut all the straps, and he didn't move. Nothing changed. She yanked on his good leg as hard as she could. Nothing. She pulled again, lost her balance, and fell into the mud and rocks.
"What?"
she screamed at the opening.
"What?"
Metal snapped. Something clanged against the rock. Matthew plummeted, banged into the wall, thudded hard into the mud beside Lenny. The pack landed beside her, splashing mud. Lenny scrambled over to him, pulled his head onto her lap, wiped his bloody face with her muddy hand.
"Matthew! Matthew!"
He wheezed, coughed. Lenny almost burst into tears. She dragged him through the mud to the saucer-shaped rock. There, she struggled and fought to get his body up onto the indented stone surface.
"I'm here,"
she said, climbing up beside him. She didn't even realize she was crying until she saw her tears splash on his muddy face.
"I love you, Matthew," Lenny said. "We're going to be okay, you and me. You'll see. We'll..."
She tried to keep talking, wanted to, needed to, but all she could think was that it was her fault he was here. Her fault. He'd fallen, trying to save her. She screamed until her throat hurt, but there was no one up there to hear. No help coming. No one even knew they were on the trail, let alone that they'd fallen into a crevasse. She'd fallen. He'd tried to save her. And here they were. Battered, bleeding, huddled together on this cold, flat rock. Think. Matthew lay beside her, his face bloodied and swollen and unrecognizable. A huge flap of skin had split away from his face and lay like a bloody dog's ear, exposing the white-red bone beneath. It was raining again. Water sluiced down the rock walls, turned the mud into a viscous pool. There was water all around them, swirling in the indentation in the rock, splashing, dripping, pooling. In the wan daylight that drifted down with the rain, she saw that Matthew's blood had turned it pink. "Help him. Help us." She crawled over him, slipped down off the rock, and dug through his pack for a tarp. It took a long time to tie it in place with only one good hand, but she finally did it, created a gully to catch rainwater into 2 big thermoses. When one was full, she positioned the other thermos to collect water, then climbed back up onto the rock. She tilted his chin, made him drink. He swallowed convulsively, gagged, coughed. Setting the thermos aside, she stared at his left leg. It looked like a pile of hamburger with a shard of bone sticking out. She went to the packs, salvaged what she could. The first aid kit was well stocked. She found Bactine, gauze, aspirin, and sanitary pads. She removed her belt.
"This is not going to feel good," How about a poem? We used to love Robert Service, remember? When we were kids, we could recite the good ones by heart.
She put her belt around his thigh and yanked it so tight he screamed and thrashed. Crying, knowing how much it had to hurt, she tightened it again, and he lost consciousness. She packed his wound with gauze and sanitary pads and bound it all in place with duct tape. Then she held him as best she could with her broken arm and cracked rib. Please don't die. Maybe he couldn't feel her. Maybe he was as cold as she was. They were both soaking wet. She had to let him know she was here. The poems. She leaned close, whispered in his ear with her hoarse, failing voice over the sound of her chattering teeth.
Were you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear?
He hears something. Jumbled sounds that mean nothing. Letters flung in a pool, floating apart. He tries to move. Can't. Numb. Pins and needles in his skin. Pain, excruciating, head exploding, leg on fire. He tries again to move. Groans. Can't think. Where is this? Pain is the biggest part of him. All there is. All that's left. Pain. Blind. Alone. No. Her. What does that mean? Matthew, Matthew, Matthew. He hears that sound. It means something to him, but what? Pain obliterates everything else. A headache so bad he can't think. The smell of vomit and mold and decay. His lungs and nostrils ache. He can't breathe without gasping. He is beginning to study his pain, see nuances. His head is pressure building, pounding, squeezing. Leg is sharp, stabbing, fire and ice.
Matthew.
A voice. Hers, like sunshine on his face.
I'm here, I'm here.
Meaningless.
Shh, it's okay, I'm here. I'll tell you another story. Maybe Sam McGee.
A touch. Agony. He thinks he screams. But maybe it's all a lie. Dying. He can feel the life draining out of him. Even the pain is gone. He is nothing. Just a lump in the wet and cold, pissing himself, vomiting, screaming. Sometimes his breathing just stops, and he coughs when it starts again. The smell is terrible. Mold, muck, decay, piss, vomit. Bugs are crawling all over him, buzzing in his ears. The only thing keeping him alive is her. She talks and talks, familiar, rhyming words that almost make sense. He can hear her breathing. He knows when she is awake and when she's asleep. She gives him water, makes him drink. He is bleeding now, through his nose. He can taste it, feel its viscous slime. She is blearying. No, that's a wrong word. Crying. He tries to hold on to that, but it goes like everything else, at a blur, too fast to grasp. He is floating again. Her. I love you, Matthew, don't leave me. Consciousness pulls away from him. He fights for it, loses, and sinks back into the smelly darkness. 22. After two terrible, freezing nights, Matthew moved for the first time. He didn't wake up, didn't open his eyes, but he moaned and made this terrible clicking sound like he was suffocating. A trapezoid of blue sky hung above them. It had finally stopped raining. Lenny saw the rock face clearly, all the ridges and indentations and footholds. He was burning up with fever. Lenny made him swallow more aspirin and poured the last of the Bactine on his wound and rewrapped it in new gauze and duct tape. Still, she could feel the life ebbing out of him. There was no him in the broken body beside her.
Don't leave me, Matthew.
A distant whirring sound reached down into the darkness, the thwop, thwop, thwop of a helicopter.
We're here!
She shouted, sloshing to the break in the rocks where the sky showed. She flattened herself to the sheer rock wall, waved her good arm, screaming, "We're here! Down here!"
She heard dogs barking, the buzz of human voices. A flashlight shone down on her.
"Lenora Albright!" yelled a man in a brown uniform. "Is that you?" "We're taking you up first, Lenora,"
someone said. She couldn't see his face in the mix of sunlight and shadow.
"No, Matthew first. He's worse."
The next thing she knew, she was being strapped into a cage and hauled up the sheer rock wall. The cage banged into granite, clanged. Pain ricocheted in her chest, down her arm. The cage landed on solid ground with a clatter. Sunlight blinded her. There were men in uniforms all around, dogs barking wildly, whistles being blown. She closed her eyes again, felt herself being transported to the grassy patch up the trail, heard the thwop, thwop, thwop of a helicopter.
"I want to wait for Matthew," she yelled.
"You'll be fine, miss,"
someone in a uniform said, his face too close, his nose spread like a mushroom in the field of his face.
"We're airlifting you to the hospital in Anchorage."
"Matthew,"
she said, clutching his collar with her one good hand, yanking him close. She saw his face change.
"The boy? He's behind you. We've got him."
He didn't say Matthew would be fine. Lenny opened her eyes slowly, saw a strip of overhead lighting above her, a line of glowing white against an acoustical tile ceiling. The room smelled cloyingly sweet, full of flower arrangements and balloons. Her ribs were wrapped so tightly it hurt to breathe, and her broken arm was in a cast. The window beside her revealed a pale purple sky.
"There's my baby girl,"
Mama said. The left side of her face was swollen, and her forehead was black and blue. Wrinkled, dirty clothes told the tale of a mother's worry. She kissed Lenny's forehead, pushed the hair gently away from her eyes.
"You're okay,"
Lenny said, relieved.
"I'm okay, Lenny. You're the one we've been worried about. How did they find us?" "We looked everywhere. I was beside myself with worry. Everyone was. Tom finally remembered a place his wife had loved to camp. He went looking and found the truck. Search and rescue saw some broken branches on Bear Claw Ridge where you fell. Thank God. Matthew tried to save me. I know. You told the paramedics about a dozen times. How is he?"
Mama touched Lenny's bruised cheek.
"He's in bad shape. They don't know if he'll make it through the night."
Lenny struggled to sit up. Every breath and movement hurt. There was a needle stuck in the back of her hand, and around it a strip of flesh-colored tape over a purple bruise. She eased the needle out, threw it aside.
"What are you doing?" Mama asked. "You have two broken ribs. I need to see Matthew. It's the middle of the night. I don't care."
She swung her bare, bruised, scratched legs over the side of the bed and stood. Mama moved in close, became a stanchion of support. Together, they shuffled away from the bed. At the door, Mama lifted the curtain and looked through the window, then nodded. They slipped out. Mama closed the door quietly behind them. Lenny inched painfully forward on stockinged feet, following her mother down one corridor to the next until they came to the brilliantly lit, coldly efficient-looking area called the intensive care unit.
"Wait here,"
Mama said. She went on ahead, checking rooms. At the last one on the right, she turned back, motioned for Lenny to follow. On the door behind her mother, Lenny saw Walker, Matthew, written on a clipboard in a clear plastic sleeve.
"This may be hard,"
Mama said.
"He looks bad."
Lenny opened the door, went inside. There were machines everywhere, thunking and humming and whirring, making a sound like human breathing. The boy in the bed couldn't be Matthew. His head was shaved and covered in bandages. Gauze crisscrossed his face, the white fabric tinged pink by blood seepage. One eye was covered by a protective cup, the other was swollen shut.
His leg was elevated, suspended about 18 inches above the bed by a leather sling, and so swollen it looked more like a tree trunk than a boy's leg. All she could see of it were his big, purple toes peeking out from the bandages. A tube in his slack mouth connected him to a machine that lifted and fell in breaths, inflated and deflated his chest, breathing for him. Lenny took hold of his hot, dry hand. He was here, fighting for his life because of her, because he loved her. She leaned down, whispered, "Don't leave me, Matthew. Please, I love you." After that, she didn't know what to say. She stood there as long as she could, hoping he could feel her touch, hear her breathing, understand her words. It felt like hours had passed when Mama finally pulled her away from the bed, said, "No arguments," firmly, and led her back to her own room and helped her back into bed. "Where's Dad?" Lenny said at last. "He's in jail, thanks to Marge and Tom." She tried to smile. "Good," Lenny said, and saw her mother flinch. The next morning, Lenny woke slowly. She had a split second of blessed amnesia, then the truth tackled her. She saw Mama slumped in a chair by the door. "Is he alive?" Lenny asked. "He made it through the night." Before Lenny could process this, there was a knock at the door. Mama turned as Mr. Walker entered. He looked exhausted, as haggard and unmoored as Lenny felt.
"Hey, Lenny."
He pulled the trucker's cap off his head, crushed it nervously in his big hands. His gaze moved to Mama, barely landing, before it returned to Lenny. A wordless conversation took place between them, excluded Lenny.
"Large Marge and Thelma and Tika are here. Clyde is taking care of your animals."
"Thank you," Mama said. "How is Matthew?" Lenny asked, struggling to sit up, wheezing at the pain in her chest.
"He's in a medically induced coma. There's a problem with his brain, something called shearing, and he might be paralyzed. They're going to try to wake him, see if he can breathe on his own. They don't think he'll be able to."
"They think he'll die when they unplug him?" Mr. Walker nodded.
"He'd want you there, I think."
"Oh, Tom," Mama said. "I don't know. She's hurt, and it will be too much for her to see."
"No looking away, Mama," Lenny said, and climbed out of bed. Mr. Walker took her arm, steadied her. Lenny looked at him.
"I'm the reason he's hurt. He tried to save me. It's my fault."
"He couldn't do anything else, Lenny. Not after what happened to his mom. I know my son. Even if he'd known the price, he would have tried to rescue you."
Lenny wished that made her feel better, but it didn't.
"He loves you, Lenny. I'm glad he found that."
He was already talking as if Matthew were gone. She let Mr. Walker lead her out of the room and down the hall. She felt her mother behind her. Every now and then she would reach out, brush her fingertips against the small of Lenny's back. They entered Matthew's room. Alyeska was already there, with her back to the wall.
"Hey, Len," Alyeska said.
Len, just like her brother. Alyeska hugged Lenny. They didn't know each other well, but tragedy created a kind of family relationship between them.
"He would have tried to save you no matter what. It's who he is."
Lenny couldn't answer. The door opened, and three people came into the room, dragging equipment with them. In the lead was a man in a white coat. Behind him were two nurses in orange scrubs.
"You'll need to stay over there," the doctor said to Lenny and Mama. "Except for you, Dad. You come stand by the bed."
Lenny moved to the wall, stood with her back pressed to it. There was barely any distance between her and Alyeska, but it seemed like an ocean. On one shore, the sister who loved him. On the other, the girl who'd been the cause of his fall. Alyeska reached over and held Lenny's hand. The medical team moved efficiently around Matthew's bed, nodding and talking to one another, taking notes, checking machines, recording vital signs. Then the doctor said,
"Okay."
Mr. Walker leaned down and whispered something to Matthew and kissed his bandaged forehead,
murmured words Lenny couldn't hear. When he drew back, he was crying. He turned to the doctor and nodded. Slowly, the tube was pulled out of Matthew's mouth. An alarm sounded. Lenny heard Aliaska say, "Come on, Maddie, you can do it." She pulled away from the wall, stepped forward, brought Lenny with her. And Mr. Walker,
"You're a tough kid. Fight."
An alarm sounded. Beep, beep, beep. The nurses exchanged a knowing look. Lenny shouldn't speak, but there was no way to hold back.
"Don't leave us, Matthew. Please."
Mr. Walker gave Lenny a terrible, agonized look. Matthew took a great, gulping, gasping breath. The alarm silenced itself.
"He's breathing on his own," the doctor said.
"He's back," Lenny thought with a staggering relief. "He'll be fine."
"Thank God,"
Mr. Walker said on a sigh.
"Don't get your hopes up,"
the doctor said, and the room went quiet.
"Matthew may breathe on his own, but never wake up. He may remain in a persistent vegetative state. If he does wake, he may have substantial cognitive impairment. Breathing is one thing. Life is another."
"Don't say that," Lenny said too softly for anyone to hear. "He might hear you."
"He will be okay," Allie murmured. "He'll wake up and smile and say he's hungry. He's always hungry. He'll want one of his books."
"He's a fighter," Mr. Walker added.
Lenny couldn't say anything. The high she'd felt when he took that first breath had gone. Like getting to the top of a roller coaster, there was a nanosecond of pure exhilaration before the headlong plunge into fear.
"They're discharging you today," Mama said, while Lenny stared up at the television suspended on the wall in her hospital room.
Radar was babbling some story to Hawkeye on MASH. Lenny hit the off button. She'd spent years wishing she could watch TV. Now she couldn't care less. Really, she had trouble caring about anything except Matthew. Her emotions were impossible to access.
"I don't want to go."
"I know," Mama said, stroking her hair.
"But we have to leave."
"Where will we go?"
"Home. But don't worry, your dad's in jail."
Home. 4 days ago, when she'd been in that crevasse with Matthew, hoping against hope that they'd be rescued before he died in her arms, she'd told herself they'd be okay. Matthew would be fine, they'd go to college together, and Mama would come to Anchorage with them, get an apartment, maybe serve drinks at Chilkoot Charlie's and collect big tips. 2 days ago, when she'd watched them pull the tube from Matthew's mouth and seen him breathe on his own, she'd had a split second of hope, and then it had crashed on the rocks of may never wake up. Now she saw the truth. There would be no college for her and Matthew, no do-over as a pair of ordinary kids in love. There was no way to lie to herself anymore, to dream of happy endings. All she could do was be there for Matthew and keep on loving him. "I think you stand by the people you love." That was what he'd said, and it was what she would do.
"Can I see Matthew before I go?"
"No. He's got an infection in his leg. They won't even let Tom get near him. But we'll come back as soon as we can."
"Okay."
Lenny felt nothing as she dressed to go home. Nothing. She shuffled through the hallway beside her mother, the casted arm held in close to her body, nodding at the nurses who told her goodbye. Did she smile in acknowledgement? She didn't think so. Even that small a thing was beyond her. This grief was unlike any emotion she'd experienced before, suffocating, weighty. It pulled the color from everything. They found Mr. Walker in the main waiting area, pacing, drinking black coffee from a styrofoam cup. Aliaska was seated in a chair beside him, reading a magazine. At their entrance, both tried to smile.
"I'm sorry," Lenny said to them.
Mr. Walker came closer. He touched her chin, forced her to look up.
"No more of that,"
he said.
"We Alaskans are tough, right? Our boy will pull through. He'll survive. You'll see."
But wasn't it Alaska that had nearly killed him? How could a place be as alive as Alaska, as beautiful and cruel? No, it wasn't Alaska's fault. It was hers. Lenny was Matthew's second mistake. Alyeska moved in beside her father.
Don't you give up on him, Lenny. He's a tough kid. He made it through Mom's death. He'll get through this, too.
How will I know how he's doing? Lenny asked.
I'll give updates on the radio. Peninsula Pipeline. 7 p.m. broadcast. Listen for them, Mr. Walker said. We'll bring him home as soon as we can. He'll recover better around us.
Lenny nodded numbly. Mama led her out to the truck, and they climbed in. On the long drive home, Mama chatted nervously. She pointed out the extreme low tide in Turnigan Arm and the cars parked at the Birdhouse Tavern in the middle of the day and the crowd of people fishing at the Russian River. Combat fishing, they called it. People stood so close together. Usually, Lenny loved this drive. She'd search the high ridges for specks of white that were doll sheep, and she'd scour the inlet for the sleek, eerie-looking white beluga whales that sometimes appeared. Now she just sat quietly, her one good hand lying in her lap. In Connick, they drove off the ferry, rumbled over the textured metal ramp, and rolled past the old Russian church. Lenny took care not to look at the saloon as they drove past. Even so, she saw the closed sign on its door and the flowers laid in front. Nothing else had changed. They drove to the end of the road and through the open gate onto their property. There, Mama parked in front of the cabin and got out. She came around to Lenny's side, opened the door. Lenny slid sideways, grateful for her mother's firm grip as they walked through the tall grass. The goats bleated, packed in together, and stood in a clot at the chicken wire gate. Inside the cabin, buttery August sunlight streamed through the dirty windows, thickened by motes of dust. The cabin was spotless. No broken glass, no lanterns fallen on the floor, no overturned chairs, no sign of what had happened here. And it smelled good, of roasting meat. Almost exactly when Lenny noticed the scent, Dad came out of the bedroom. Mama gasped. Lenny felt nothing. Certainly not surprise. He stood there facing them, his long hair pulled back into a squiggly ponytail. His face was bruised, a little misshapen. One eye was black. He was wearing the same clothes Lenny had last seen him in, and there were dried flecks of blood on his neck.
You're out, Mama said.
You didn't press charges,
he answered. Mama's face turned red. She didn't look at Lenny. He moved toward Mama.
Because you love me, and you know I didn't mean any of it. You know how sorry I am. It won't happen again,
he promised as he reached for her. Lenny didn't know if it was fear or love or habit or a poisonous combination of all three, but Mama reached out too. Her pale fingers threaded through his dirty ones, curled in to take hold. He pulled her into his arms, held onto her so tightly he must have thought they'd be swept away, one without the other. When they finally pulled apart, he turned to Lenny.
I heard he's going to die. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Lenny felt something then, a seismic shift in her thinking, like spring breakup, a changing of the landscape, a breaking away that was violent, immediate. She wasn't afraid of this man anymore. Or if she was, the fear was submerged too deeply to register. All she felt was hatred.
Lenny,
he said, frowning.
I'm sorry. Say something.
She saw what her silence did to him, how it shredded his confidence, and she decided right then she would never speak to her father again. Let Mama slink back. Let her twine herself back into this toxic knot that was their family. Lenny would stay only as long as she had to. As soon as Matthew was better, she would leave. If this was the life Mama chose for herself, so be it. Lenny was going to leave. As soon as Matthew was better.
Lenny?
Mama said, her voice uncertain. She, too, was confused and frightened by this change in Lenny. She sensed an upheaval in emotion that could move the continents of their past. Lenny walked past them both, climbed awkwardly up the loft ladder, and crawled into bed.
Dear Matthew, I never really knew the weight of sorrow before, how it stretches you out like an old wet sweater. Every minute that passes with no word from you, without hope of word from you, feels like a day. Every day feels like a month. I want to believe that you will just sit up one day and say you're starving, that you'll swing your legs out of bed and get dressed and come for me, maybe carry me off to your family's hunting cabin where we will burrow under the furs and love each other again. That's the big dream. Strangely, it doesn't hurt as much as the little dream, which is just that you open your eyes. I know what happened to us was my fault. Meeting me ruined your life. No one can argue with that. Me, with my screwed-up family, with my dad, who wanted to kill you for loving me and who beat my mother for simply knowing about it. My hatred of him is a poison burning me from the inside out. Every time I look at him, something in me hardens. It scares me how much I hate him. I haven't spoken to him since I got back. He doesn't like that, I can tell. Honestly, I don't know what to do with all these emotions. I'm furious. I'm desperate. I'm sad in a way I never knew existed. There's no outlet for my feelings, no valve to shut them down. I listen to the radio every night at 7 p.m. Last night, your dad broadcast how you're doing. I know you're out of the coma and not paralyzed, and I try to make that good enough, but it's not. I know you can't walk or talk, and that your brain is probably irreparably damaged. That's what the nurses said. None of it changes how I feel. I love you. I'm here, waiting. I want you to know that. I'll wait forever. Lenny.
Lenny sat in the bow of the fishing skiff, leaned over, fluttering bare fingers through cool water, watching it cascade and pool. The cast on her other arm looked starkly white against her dirty jeans. Her broken ribs made her conscious of every breath. She could hear her parents talking softly together. Her mama was closing the cooler, full now of silvery fish. Dad started up the engine. The boat motor started, the bow planed up as they sped for home. At their beach, the boat crunched up onto the pebbles and sand, made a sound like sausage sizzling in a cast-iron pan. Lenny jumped into the ankle-deep water, grabbed the frayed line with her one good hand, and pulled the skiff aground. She tied it to a huge, limbless driftwood log that lay angled on the beach and went back for the dripping metal net.
"That was quite a silver Mom landed," Dad said to Lenny. "I guess she's the day's big winner."
Lenny ignored him. Slinging the gear bag over her shoulder, she headed up the steps, making her way slowly to dry land. Once there, she put her gear away and headed to the animal pens to check that their water was okay. She fed the goats and the chickens, stayed to turn the compost in the bin, and then started hauling water from the river. It took longer with only one strong arm. She stayed outside as long as she could, but finally she had to go inside. Mama was in the kitchen making dinner, pan-fried fresh-caught salmon, drizzled with homemade herb butter, green beans fried in preserved moose fat, a salad of freshly picked lettuce and tomatoes. Lenny set the table, sat down. Dad took a seat across from her. She didn't look up, but she heard the clatter of chair legs on the wood, the squeak of the seat as he sat down. She smelled the familiar combination of perspiration and fish and cigarette smoke.
"I was thinking we would head over to Bear Cove tomorrow, pick blueberries. I know how much you love them."
Lenny didn't look at him. Mama came up beside Lenny, holding a pewter tray of the crispy-skinned fish with bright green beans tucked in alongside. She paused, then set it down in the middle of the table next to an old soup can full of flowers.
"Your favorite," she said to Lenny.
"Uh-huh," Lenny said.
"God damn it, Lenny,"
her father said.
"I can't abide this moping.
You ran off. The kid fell. What's done is done.
Lenny ignored him.
Say something.
Lenny, Mama said. Please. Dad shoved back from the table and stormed out of the cabin, slamming the door shut behind him. Mama sank into her chair. Lenny could see how tired her mother was, how her hands trembled.
You have to stop this, Lenny. It's upsetting him.
So?
Lenny, you'll be gone soon. He'll let you go to college now. He feels terrible about what happened. We can get him to agree. You can leave, just like you want it. All you have to do is...
No! She said more forcibly than she meant to, and she saw the effect her shouting had on Mama, how she instinctively shrank back. Lenny wanted to care that she was frightening her mother, but she couldn't hold on to that caring. Mama had chosen to dig for treasure through the dirt of Dad's toxic, porous love, but not Lenny. Not anymore. She knew what her silence was doing to him, how it angered him. Each hour she didn't speak to him, he became more agitated and irritable, more dangerous. She didn't care.
He loves you,
Mama said.
Ha.
You're lighting a fuse, Lenny. You know that.
Lenny couldn't tell Mama how angry she was, the sharp, tiny teeth that gnawed at her all the time, shredding a little more of her away every time she looked at her father. She pushed back from the table and went to the loft to write to Matthew, trying not to think about her mother sitting down there all alone.
Dear Matthew, I am trying not to lose hope, but you know how hard it has always been for me. Hope, I mean. It's been 4 days since I last saw you. It feels like forever. It's funny, now that hope has become so slippery and unreliable, I realize that all those years, when I was a kid thinking I didn't believe in hope, I was actually living on it. Mama fed me a steady diet of, he's trying, and I lapped it up like a terrier. Every day I believed her. When he smiled at me, or gave me a sweater, or asked me how my day was, I thought, see? He cares. Even after I saw him hit her for the first time, I still let her define the world for me. Now it is all gone. Maybe he's sick. Maybe Vietnam broke him. And maybe those are all excuses set at the feet of a man who is just rotting from the inside. I don't know anymore. And as much as I try, I can't care. I have no hope left for him. The only hope I can hold on to is for you, for us. I'm still here.
23. Dear Admissions Director, University of Alaska, Anchorage. I am very sorry to say that I will not be able to attend classes at the university this quarter. I am hopeful, although doubtful, that winter quarter will see a change in my circumstance. I will be forever grateful for my acceptance and hope that another lucky student can take my spot. Sincerely, Lenora Albright. In September, cold winds roared across the peninsula. Darkness began its slow, relentless march toward the land. By October, the moment that was autumn in Alaska had passed. Every night at 7 p.m., Lenny sat close to the radio, the volume cranked high, static popping, listening for Mr. Walker's voice, waiting for news on Matthew. But week after week, there was no improvement. In November, the precipitation turned to snow, light at first, goose down fluttering from white skies. The muddy ground froze, turned hard as granite, slippery. But soon a layer of white lay over everything, a new beginning of sorts, a camouflage of beauty over whatever lay hidden beneath. And still, Matthew wasn't Matthew. On an ice-cold evening that followed the first vicious storm of the season, Lenny finished her chores in a sooty darkness and returned to the cabin. Once inside, she ignored her parents and stood in front of the wood stove, her hands outstretched to its warmth. Gingerly, she flexed the fingers of her left hand. The arm still felt weak, foreign somehow, but it was a relief to have the cast off. She turned, saw her own reflection in the window, pale, thin face with a knife-point chin. She'd lost weight since the accident and rarely bothered to bathe. Grief had upset everything, her appetite, her stomach, her sleep. She looked bad, drained and exhausted, bags under her eyes. She went to the radio at exactly 6:55 and turned it on. Through the speaker, she heard Mr. Walker's voice, steady as a trawler in calm seas.
To Lenny Albright in Connick, we're moving Matthew to a long-term facility in Homer. You can visit on Tuesday afternoon. It's called Peninsula Rehabilitation Center.
I'm going to see him, Lenny said. Dad was sharpening his ulu. He stopped.
The hell you are.
Lenny didn't glance at him or flinch. Mama, tell him if he wants to stop me, he'll have to shoot me. Lenny heard her mother draw in a sharp breath. Seconds passed. Lenny felt her father's anger and his uncertainty. She could feel the war waging within him. He wanted to explode, to exert his will, to hit something. But she meant it, and he knew it. He hit the coffee pot, sent it flying, muttered something they couldn't quite hear. Then he cursed, threw up his hands, and backed away all in a single jerking movement.
Go, Dad said. Go see the boy, but get your chores done first, and you...
He turned to Mama, pointed a finger at her, thumped it on her chest.
She goes alone. You hear me?
I hear you, Mama said. Tuesday finally came. Ernt, Mama said after lunch. Lenny needs a ride to town.
Tell her to take the old snow machine, not the new one, and be back by dinner.
He gave Lenny a look.
I mean it. Don't make me come looking for you.
Yanking his iron animal traps from their hooks on the wall, he went outside, banging the door behind him. Mama moved forward, glancing uncertainly behind her. She pressed two folded-up pieces of paper in Lenny's hand. Letters, for Thelma and Marge. Lenny took the letters, nodded.
Don't be stupid, Lenny. Be back before dinner. Those gates could close again any time. They're only open because he feels bad for what he did, and he's trying to be good. Like I care. I care. And you should care for me.
Lenny felt the sting of her selfishness.
Yeah.
Outside, Lenny angled into the wind and trudged through the snow. When she finished feeding the animals, she pulled the starter on the snow machine and climbed aboard. In town, she pulled up in front of the harbor dock entrance and parked. A water taxi was waiting for Lenny. Mama had called for it on the ham radio. The sea was too rough to take the skiff out. Lenny slung her backpack over her shoulder and headed down the slick, icy dock ramp. The water taxi captain waved at her. Lenny knew he wasn't going to charge her for the ride. He was in love with Mama's cranberry relish. Every year, she made 2 dozen jars of it just for him. That was how the locals did it, trading. Lenny handed him a jar and climbed aboard. As she sat on the bench in the back, staring up at the town perched on stilts above the mud, she told herself not to have any hopes for today. She knew Matthew's condition, had heard the words so often they'd worn a groove in her consciousness. Brain damage. Even so, at night, after writing her daily letter to Matthew, she often fell asleep dreaming it was a sleeping beauty kind of thing, a dark spell that the kiss of true love could undo. She could marry him and hope that her love would waken him. 40 minutes later, after a bumpy, splashing crossing of Kachemak Bay, the water taxi pulled up to the dock and Lenny jumped out. On this ice-cold winter day, fog coiled along the waterline of the spit. There were only a few locals out in this weather, and no tourists. Most of the businesses were closed for the season. She left the road and began the uphill climb into Homer proper. She'd been told that if she came to the house with the pink boat in the yard and 4th of July decorations still up, she'd gone too far on Wardell. The care facility sat at the edge of town, on a widely overgrown lot with a gravel parking lot. She stopped. A huge